to give a presentation has given me a joke to tell, so let's see who's awake. I'm going to use that as a way to see who's awake today. So his joke this week was, what kind of sickness do people who practice martial arts get? Anybody know?
Kung flu.
Oh.
I'm awake.
Yes, she's next awake over here. Okay, good. <Yeah. laughs> Gotta appreciate 9-year-old humor. Usually it's some kind of sport, so that's kind of fun. As Meg said, I'm going to talk about diabetes, quality of care, and physical disabilities in Kansas. And I have to acknowledge and thank, and their name should have been listed in the program along with mine. It really was a team effort. My colleagues, Dr. Teresa Shireman, Haley Stozel, who's now in Botswana serving the Peace Corps, and Dr. Carol Sella. The research was funded by NIDER, and the results don't necessarily reflect the opinions of the Kansas Health Policy Authority, who provided the data, or any other state agency. And I have no financial disclosures to report. So by the end of my talk today, I hope that you can describe the diabetes prevalence rate of individuals with physical disabilities supported by Medicaid in Kansas. And kind of like you said, part of why we're interested in this is to give the information that we need for evidence-based policy making in our state to the people who are making those decisions, and that doesn't always happen. So trying to give them some statistics to talk about. And also, you should be able to describe the diabetes quality of care indicator screening rates for adults with physical disabilities supported by Medicaid in Kansas, and also talk about the significance of these findings. So over the past few years, couple decades, you know, we've been inundated with information about the obesity epidemic and the concomitant rise in diabetes incidence and prevalence. And it's important that we as public health researchers and practitioners assess the effectiveness of health promotion and prevention and management of this disease. The standard of care in managing diabetes and its associated sequelae is regular screening for HbA1c, cholesterol, and foot and eye exams. Little research has examined whether people with physical disabilities are affected differentially from people without disabilities by diabetes and its associated care. But we learned from some recent work looking at the Medical Expenditures Panel Survey, or MEPS data, that people with physical disabilities had 2.2 times higher odds of developing diabetes than those with no disability. This bar graph shows that the age-adjusted prevalence rate of diabetes among people with physical disabilities was 15.1%. That's the red bar on the right that shows 15.1% among people with physical disabilities, and the blue bar shows that it was 3.7% among people with no disabilities. And we need this kind of information in order to increase awareness among healthcare providers, people with disabilities and their care providers, and other public health professionals who, in order to ensure the effective disease management and prevention. And the higher likelihood of people with physical disabilities developing diabetes and other chronic conditions makes the lack of attention to this segment of the population particularly concerning. We know that social and environmental barriers such as lack of transportation and physical inaccessibility of medical facilities, as well as lack of or under insurance, can make chronic disease management more difficult for people with disabilities, especially in comparison to people without disabilities. Our study examined the extent to which the recommended quality of care standards are adequately implemented in Kansas for people with physical disabilities. We conducted a retrospective cohort analysis using state Medicaid claims, administrative claims data. We examined the quality of care for people with physical disabilities who were supported by the Kansas Medicaid and also the Home and Community-Based Services waiver for people with physical disabilities in our state. We also included only those who were continuously eligible or continuously enrolled for the 24 months of interest in our study. To identify people with diabetes, we searched inpatient and outpatient service claims for diabetes diagnosis codes, or ICD-9 codes. And we also searched pharmacy claims for major classes of diabetes drugs. People were considered to have diabetes if in a one-year time period, which in this case was from July of 2007 to June of 2008, they had two or more outpatient claims for diabetes, or one or more inpatient claim for diabetes, and one or more, or one or more pharmacy-based claim for diabetes. Then we tracked their quality of care in the subsequent year, so from July of 08 to June of 09. We modeled our main outcomes on the HEDIS 2010 measures for diabetes, and these included lipids testing or cholesterol, eye exams, glucose or HbA1c testing, and primary care visits, because those were the ones that we were able to get out of the administrative claims. We found that there were 9,532 people continuously enrolled in 2008, fiscal year 2008, and of those, 3,722, or 39%, had diabetes. And those of you who follow diabetes prevalence rates, you're probably kind of going, really? And you should be, but it's right. 5 minutes. Yeah, talk faster. Huh? Oh no, I thought you weren't showing me that. Oh good, I thought she was telling me I had 5 minutes. Among the diabetic cohort, the majority were Caucasian, 77%, female, 70%, resided in a medically underserved area, almost 80%, dually eligible for Medicaid and Medicare, almost 66%, and had comorbid hypertension, 72%. The mean age was of the diabetic group was 58, and that was over 4 years older on average than the cohort without diabetes. And those with diabetes were less likely to be Caucasian, more likely to be female, to live in a medically underserved area, and to have comorbid hypertension. That was an interesting finding. 72% of the people who were diabetic also had hypertension versus 40% of people who were not diabetic. For three out of the four quality of care indicators, the rates of receipt were respectable. It was shocking to me after looking at the same question for the IDD population that they were as high as they were. Happily, they were high. Nearly 87% received eye exams. Nearly 83% received glucose or HbA1c tests. And 87% had visited a primary care physician in that year. And these are in line with or higher than the National Center for Quality Assurance, or NCQA, measures for Medicaid recipients. The one exception was cholesterol, and it was very, very low for the standard of care that we'd like to see. And for our state and just what we have set as national standards of care. I the way I'll say this is a little different than the way it is on the screen, but essentially women, those who are dually eligible for Medicaid, Medicare, and those with hypertension were more likely to have received the glucose screening, the eye exam, and the cholesterol screening. But even though they were statistically significant, we're talking about, in most instances, it was maybe 2 to 4% difference. So although they were higher, it wasn't like huge disparities in those areas. And then females, Caucasians, dual eligibles, and those with comorbid hypertension had significantly more primary care visits. Is it on the wrong slide? Give you. So females, Caucasians, duals, and those with comorbid hypertension. The other, there were no statistically significant differences in the other areas. So our interpretation of this, what does this all mean? Well, as I mentioned earlier, 39% of people enrolled in Kansas Home and Community-Based Services, or HCBS PD waiver, had diabetes, 39%. Not only is this rate much higher than expected based on what we saw in the literature, it's likely underestimated because we used administrative claims data to come by that number. And with actual lab and physical exams, we would expect it to be higher and more accurate. In addition, if we don't reduce environmental barriers and make disease management and prevention more accessible to people with and achievable for people with disabilities, we can expect this prevalence rate to go up. And especially as we see the increasing trends in obesity. Yeah, I was going to say, somebody pointed this out to me recently. I don't know if you guys have seen this, but someone said, according to the NHANES, an analysis of the NHANES, in people with a BMI of 27 or greater, 70% have type 2 diabetes, 56% have hypertension, and 47% have high cholesterol. And 27, although it, you know, that's a high BMI, it's not as high as you would think. I mean, it's really, that was kind of scary to me to hear that statistic. I'd never heard it put quite that way. So people with a BMI of over 27, 70% have diabetes. Oops, did I go the wrong way? Happily, I made some changes in what I'm going to say, and they may not match my slides because I couldn't figure out how to update my my slides. But happily, the quality of care screening rates were, for diabetes care in our study population, were comparable to the national key indicators. While this is encouraging, the extraordinarily high prevalence rate clearly indicates and warrants further the need for further investigation of this topic. It's likely that for some people in the study, or maybe a lot, we don't know how many, diabetes may have been what led to their disability. It may be that they didn't have a disability that led, and then they developed diabetes. It may be the diabetes that led to disability. And that's an important distinction to make sometimes. And most importantly, it reflects the poor quality of care and control of the disease earlier in their lives and in their care. And better management at earlier stages would help relieve the cost burdens on public programs and help improve quality of life for the people that we're talking about. And although we found that people with physical disabilities are getting their quality of care screenings, what we don't know and we didn't look at because we can't from administrative claims data is how effectively they're managing their diabetes. So although they got their HbA1c checked, or they got their cholesterol checked, we don't have any idea what their actual scores were. And some of the other findings we had kind of say maybe they're not doing such a great job of managing it. So an important next step is to conduct research to assess that gap. And again, we can't get that from administrative claims data. We have to do it from another study. But it's an important question to ask. You know, we know that people with physical disabilities have many higher rates for many chronic conditions, and they're also more likely to have multiple chronic conditions. So that makes that that even more important. We're also concerned because Kansas Medicaid, maybe like a lot of your states as well, does not cover diabetes self-management education. And that's an evidence-based practice that's been demonstrated to reduce healthcare costs and improve health outcomes. You know, we often hear our legislators complaining because of the health of people with disabilities supported by Medicaid, but they don't want to. They haven't so far given them the tools they need in order to do so, to change that. So that's a change we'd like to see in our state, and I imagine it's true for other states as well. We're also concerned that people with disabilities and diabetes may not be accessing the care that they need. We had 7% of the cohort of people with diabetes who had zero outpatient claims. That means they're not getting anything checked, even though, so they were identified in 1 year, and then we looked at the follow-up care in the next year, and they had zero outpatient claims. Now, some of those probably moved out of state, some of them probably died, but not all of them, and that's concerning, especially, as I said, because we know that people have multiple chronic conditions, so diabetes is likely not the only condition that they have. So how do we get them into the doctor's offices? Why are they not coming in? And what can we do about it? It's important to remember that, as I've said several times, it's only from one state. It's only Kansas. But all of these things point to the need to look at these same measures in all the states. On a national level, at a state level, we really need that further information. And as well for private health insurance, because we just don't know. But a strength of our study methods is that we were able to identify people with physical disabilities from the total adult Medicaid population. So that allows us to do greater surveillance work for that population. And to our knowledge, this is the first study published that's able to do that. And this is important because prevalence rates and the quality of care indicators can differ between disability subgroups, and therefore maybe how we address it through public health might differ as well. And we believe that the best way to handle that is through a team-based approach that includes healthcare providers, caseworkers, people with disabilities and their care providers, community care coordinators, and health educators. Thank you.